extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire. From Kansas City, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. Big show today, boys. Results, results, results in the CONCACAF Champions League. 4-4-4. Nothing can stop us now. We are winning this tournament. Is that like on a better level than I was last night for you?
Boom.
Does that feel authentic to you, or does it feel like
that did not feel authentic? Why don't you get through plugging all our stuff first before we go back and forth on this week?
That's fine. I'll get to the impending doom. But for now, it's all positive for MLS and CCL. Two wins, two draws, another game tonight, Thursday night, if you're listening right when it comes out. So that's 8 p.m. Eastern, Columbus Crew, Real Esteli. You might see what we're wearing right now if you're watching on YouTube, which, again, I recommend you do so, even if you subscribe to the podcast. Hashtag KPIs. Help us out here, folks. But we got hooked up, man. We got hooked up. I got the Colorado Rapids pullover. I mean, this is going to be, like, I'm going to sleep in this with just dreams of, like, a Marcelo Balboa just going through my head. I mean, this is some cool stuff. I am jealous, Doyle, of the Clash kit.
Yeah, the original Clash kit, the original 96 Clash kit. I looked kind of like a street sign. There's a lot of neon. There's a lot of neon here. But, you know, it's a throwback Thursday. That's what we're experiencing here. Gasman, are you wearing a short sleeve hoodie? They knew it. They knew your exact style.
Yeah,
basketball, he's like a boxer. Has returned, baby.
Exactly.
You can hold me now.
Just chuck
right
it up.
Here.
You're right, a three-point shooter if I had to guess. This is the Since 96 collection that we have been so graciously hooked up with. You can get it at MLSsoccer.com. It's with Mitchell and Ness. Super cool. I wish I would have got some KC Wizards stuff. My brother certainly texted me when this came out and said, did you get some KC Wizards stuff? But I do have...
They were the KC Wiz.
That's
in
true. That is true.
Andrew,
yeah. Come on. You know, pay history.
Know your heritage.
Yeah, pay history. It's due here. I don't deserve it if I didn't know that. I do have right here a Timbers short sleeve hoodie that, unlike David, I do not feel the confidence to pull off. I just don't think I have it in me. So that means that somebody out there, ideally a Timbers fan, is getting themselves a free Since 96 collection Timbers hoodie, whatever we want to call this. So hit me up at Andrew_Wiebe on Twitter. Tell me why you should have this, should deserve it. It is a large. Maybe that doesn't matter to some of you. We found out after All-Star Game in Chicago one time that most people don't care what size t-shirts they're getting. As long as that thing is free, they will take it. But it's awesome. It's a really cool collection. I love the jerseys, but also the jackets.
Yeah,
might be the standouts.
That's the best thing. But I think this is what we've been asking for. Like, this fits us so perfectly of, like, we love the soccer culture in the U.S. and Canada. And, like, a lot of people sometimes every once in a while are like, oh, what's the history? There is history. League's 25 years old. Obviously, what I'm wearing from Vancouver is pre-MLS days with the NASL side. And there's just some epic logos and some epic history in all these cities. So it's cool that it reps it. And you kind of see other leagues getting that opportunity and, like, other sports. And this is something that I'm pretty sure people who don't even know MLS exists will wear. But then people who like MLS, like, I went to a bar with some friends on Sunday outdoors in distance, and he was rocking his Crew throwback jersey, and it looks good. Mm. It looks smooth. And I mean, not on him, but in general, on people.
Thanks for the invite, David.
Yeah, wow. Appreciate
right.
that. You could have zoomed me in.
With some friends. Okay, all right. I see how it is.
Yeah,
you do see how it is, Doyle. You are seeing how it is.
Well, that's awkward. All right, on today's show, as I said, MLS is winning CONCACAF Champions League, or maybe we're just being prepared to be punched in the face. We shall see. The new MLSsoccer.com has some great stuff. We've been getting tweets at the account at Extra Time about MLS Fantasy. That is back. We have assigned Anders the task of creating our league and maintaining it, because clearly none of us can be trusted to do so. So we'll shout out the winners on the show, and we'll do our best to stick with it. I know I have a bad reputation, but Dave, you already have your team made. Oh. You're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm ready. I got the email and immediately went and made my team. I'm really excited. And I did that classic thing where it's like I went super cheap on defenders, found like what I could do, and then ended up with Joseph and Vela up top because, you know, money, money,
you're
baby.
You're trying to win games, man. I would be interested to see like themed lineups this year, like the All-American lineup, yeah. The, you know, all-player kids lineups. We'll see what people come up with.
So can I just, I'm going to give away one of my secrets, which is go heavy on fullbacks. One, you're getting value. Two, you can get some offensive production. And three, it's pretty cheap, and then you could load up. So I got Pozuelo, Reynoso, Vela, and Pulido on my squad. You're welcome. You're welcome, world.
Yeah, and if you play him head-to-head in week one, you now know who he has on his squad, so find a way to differentiate, but also copy his best picks. That's the way it works. Call up at D Haslam. It was a great interview with D about an MLS Cup year one in Columbus, the new stadium, where they're going, and why their fans are partners in this entire process. Tom Bogert and Matt Doyle, you guys had the season previews, which we've been pushing at MLSsoccer.com. They're great. If you need to have a quick checkup on any team, they're right there. Plus, we have our 10-minute previews. Anders is probably in the private chat saying, you mean 17-minute? Yes, it's good stuff. And then Doyle had your roster builds. Those are finished up, I think, for the Eastern Western Conference. Like, that's it, no? Or...
Yeah, I mean, that's where I leave it off. And like at this point, it just starts to be pure preseason content. Next week, I'll have the tiers of MLS and the one reason why every team can win the Supporter Shield, which is challenging for certain teams. But yeah, like if you want to get a sense of what the depth charts look like now around the league, go to those roster build columns because it's got like my best shot at it in there. And they're usually pretty accurate.
Other stuff to hit before we jump into it. I know we have a lot to go through right now, but I have to say happy 50th anniversary to Soccer America. I read their newsletter every single morning. It really keeps me up to date with what's going on. And if you get that newsletter and you don't subscribe and then you click the links and you can't get there, like the price is very reasonable. Support Soccer America. I mean, they are sort of they're the originators of what we're doing. Like they did it before we did. They kept everybody updated when you had to run to your mailbox and go grab a magazine. And it was the one day a month that you looked forward to. So support Paul Gardner and those guys. They're doing great work over there. American Soccer Analysis has some good season previews for you to check out. And we're going to get to it, but I highly recommend getting CONCACAF by John Arnold, that newsletter. He had a piece on the Real Esteli manager from tonight. He's 24 years old. 24. That is insane. All right, let's get to it. CONCACAF Champions League.
Wait.
Yeah.
You got to say it. Happy Cruisemas.
Happy Cruisemas.
Which is actually, I've now been notified, it's Happy Cruise Giving Day because the Cruisemas is their first home game of every year. Cruise Giving is their first game if it's away every year. So go break my heart, Columbus Crew. It's on you. You're welcome.
All right. Real Stelly, as I said, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome today.
FS1. Let's do it. I have not been myself, let's say, with CCL, which is to say that I have lost my blind optimism. I'm not going to get on the therapy couch here for you, Doyle. Don't shake your head at me. Just tell me how and why you experienced this and why this is really, I mean, you might argue, the second best 24 hours for MLS in CCL history, like ever. Two draws, two wins in Costa Rica. We talked so much about Alajuelense and how good they are. They are still good, but Atlanta got the job done, and they did it in some interesting circumstance, let's say, with some interesting personnel because of said circumstances. And then two very professional draws. And again, it was the first game for all these teams. And yes, I'm trying to get on your level right now.
Oh, I don't know. I just think about how in the past, any time we've had a good day, it's made me sad.
No, no, it's followed. No, that's not the way it goes. Your Eeyore is very good. Your Eeyore is very good. It's like, oh.
We were doing Twitter Spaces last night after the Toronto game, which is, look, it was ugly for the final hour, but a 1-1 at the reigning Liga MX champions when you're playing with a team that is half USL kids is an incredible result. And Gassman and Anders and I come in on a 10 and Weeby's at a -2 and he just brings the whole thing down. There are two ways to conceptualize CCL progress. Way number one is an MLS team going to win this thing? And there has been no time in CCL history when an MLS team has been actually the favorite to win this thing. You could argue the Crew are really, really good this year, but Cruz Azul and Club America are both probably a little bit better, and both are in the midst of their seasons right now, and both are in CCL. And yeah, I know Cruz Azul struggled and got an ugly scoreless draw against a Haitian team playing in Dominican Republic. They were playing with their third string. The Cruz Azul is going to win 6-0 in the second leg.
Don't talk about Rafa Baca like that.
Rafa Baca is my guy. But so that's way number one. And I do not think this is also like, I reject Weeby's binaries. Like, oh, do we enjoy this or are we just going to get punched in the face again down the road? Oh, like that is way number one is an MLS team wins CCL, goes to Club World Cup. That would be dope. I don't think it's going to be this year. But that's not the only way to measure progress. The second way to measure progress, which is the sustainable and sort of wider ranging way to measure it and has like broader applications, is are our teams able to go down to Central America and down to Mexico and play, you know, the best teams in the region while, you know, at several disadvantages in terms of when they are in the season, players missing, climate, altitude, are they able to do that and get results? Scratch out a result, play not intimidated, give as good as they get. And over the last 2 days, we had four MLS teams go down to Central America and to Mexico and do that. And like, that is what we want to see. This is if two of the teams had done it, you could be like, oh, well, you know, same old, same old. All four teams did it. And all four teams were playing down a man, not, well, Atlanta literally, but like down, you know, starters. It like they had to cobble together lineups to a degree. Like this was significant. And I don't think that we should look at it in the context of how much. So, all right. So I think we should understand it in the context of how much better MLS has gotten in CCL since the TAM era. Like the last 5 years have been night and day compared to the previous 5 years. This is, and I think saying, oh man, are we just going to get punched in the face again down the road? I think that is just, that's crap. That's like, it's not good faith analysis of what actually happened. It's not.
If you weren't going to watch YouTube to see our throwback clothes, it's worth it to watch Doyle's face when he does the Weeby.
Yeah, it's been. I've enjoyed it. I've personally enjoyed it. I've lost my tail, and I'm never gonna find it. Oh, it's sitting right behind you.
So, just to follow up on Doyle's point, I went through. So, the group stage got dropped from CCL in 2018. Since then, we've had three teams in the quarterfinals once, and then four teams twice. This year, potentially, we could look at four, maybe five teams, depending on what the Crew do, being favorites to go in.
I mean, depending on the second legs, guys.
100%. You
know, whoa.
Stop.
Weeby, there's a difference between looking at the second leg and being like, oh, all four of these teams set themselves up to win this series. Like, each of those teams would have taken the result
Agreed.
That they got.
Not only would they take it, outside of Toronto FC, all of them are statistically favorites right now going home. Whether they get through or not is a whole nother thing, and I don't know that all of them will. I'd also say when you look at the quality of opponents, that's the other part of what we're talking about. So I was looking back, and you look at obviously last year, right? Seattle lost to Olympia. And then you look at the year before, SKC beat Toluca in the round of 16, which was great. Red Bulls beat Atletico Pantoja, which wasn't the level of team that what happened so far this week. That's part of the context you need, is you need to talk about Alajuelense being one of the best Costa Rican sides we've seen in a while. You need to talk about Saprissa being the giant that they are at home, Marathon being the quality of team they are, and then León being the reigning Liga MX champions. It's not just that MLS teams got results on the road. It's not just that they've set themselves up well. They've done it against the hardest competition that maybe MLS teams have gone out and had in the round of 16 ever in CCL history. And that's part of why there should be a level of excitement to what happened. And I was a little surprised, and I'm excited, and I'm hoping that everyone could hold it together for leg two before the crew break my heart tonight.
Guest, do you have a Weeby impression that you want
to
do?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Strictly my territory at this
point. Yeah, I want that.
I think you're nailing it. I don't want to.
I'm doing a pretty good job of it.
Cooks in the kitchen. Then you start doing my impression and impression of that, and then we're too far down the road.
And then we're basically doing Bobby Warshaw's back, and his terrible impressions are making us all groan. Look, I'm extremely excited. I guess I've trained myself to be at the point where leg one results are something to be excited about until the bottom falls out. And I'm not saying the bottom is going to fall out. I'm just saying that MLS's real progress isn't leg one. It is what has happened the last 5 years, and specifically the last 3 years. In the last 5 years compared to the 5 years prior, we got an additional team, an entire team through the round of 16 that wasn't getting through before. I mean, that is huge progress in itself, and maybe that's where we need to change the goalposts, and I need to change the goalposts and stop thinking about the final, because that's a long way away. That's literally October. Like, that might as well be a different lifetime.
And which just is the other reason that this is more
encouraging. Yes.
Because you've got teams that, if they can gut themselves through this round and potentially the next round, for the first time ever, you're looking at MLS teams at a peak level playing in this competition. You're looking at MLS teams post a summer transfer window at their level that they want to be going into an MLS playoffs, whatever that is, playing in CCL. That, outside of what LAFC did last year at the end of the year, which was a wild COVID year and wasn't, you know, obviously in normal line, would be an all-time first, and that is exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. You guys told me to go drink a cocktail and try to, like, grapple with my mind after that Spaces. I did so. I wrote the column. I looked at the research you guys are talking about and was like, you know what? There is progress here. There is a trend of MLS's improvement. Now, does that equal us winning the thing and going to the Club World Cup? We don't know yet. But I am more on your level now of just like, look, let's be excited, let's be encouraged, and let's believe that those positive steps can manifest in leg two, because if we don't, we're destined to fail anyway. Like, if we have the mindset of like, it's never going to be good enough, we're not good enough, we're just waiting for the inevitable, we will be in year 14, 15, 16, 17 of not winning this thing and not making progress. But that's not reality. We are making progress. It just might not yet be the October trophy lift that we want it to be. So I'm with you. I'm going to take a step back. Let's dig into these games individually. Where would you like to start? What was the result that really got you going the most? Was it Atlanta? I mean, down a man? That seems eloquent. I mean, they're the best opponent. They got beat. Yeah. We're going to talk to George Bello, by the way. I didn't tease that, but George Bello is coming in a second.
I think Atlanta getting that result against an Alajuelense team that had been unbeaten in 25 games, only lost one in like their last 35 or 40. Clearly the best team in Central America. Atlanta went down there and they didn't just win 1-0. They did it while playing down a man for the last 50 minutes or so. They did it. Using kind of a makeshift lineup. It was a 3-4-2-1 with Sosa playing as kind of a sweeper almost. And like the new guys look, it was just a really, it felt like a statement. Yeah. It felt like a statement of not like of how they want to play. And like, I hate to be like reactionary off of one game, but like it felt like the old Atlanta team. It felt like Tata Martino era Atlanta and how they wanted to play and open the game up and their determination to be the protagonists and the determination to make sure that this was an Atlanta United game, not an Alajuelense game.
And at a minimum, this is the best debut CCL game they've ever played. This is the third straight year they're in CCL. They've always come out, struggled, and then won in the second leg at home to get through to the next round. And then they've had their struggles against Liga MX teams as well. This was, they came out and, as Doyle said, set the tone the first 30, 35 minutes of this game under a new coach with that makeshift lineup. And so that was positive. And then to go down a man when Brad Guzan goes out and to look at a club that almost gave up on themselves last year, just playing 11v11 week in and week out, to then be able to rally and fight in such an environment like that against an opponent like that and get the result at 1-0 with a 17-year-old in goal, with a makeshift back line, Joseph Martinez coming off the bench for the first time in a year, 47-year-old at center forward, 37-year-old, whatever it was, all those things though, but they looked almost like comfortable and confident in those moments. And for Atlanta, I think the biggest things they needed to accomplish this year were cultural and maybe off the field. And this was a huge sign that they are ready to go for this year. And Gabriel Heinze has the pulse of this team and they're back to Doyle, as Doyle said, back to what Tata Martino was able to build.
We'll have to ask George Bell about that here in just a second. We're all Rocco Rios Novo, baby. Like, what a moment that is. That is what you want CCL to give you. I know that Atlanta fans, like, and that was one of those moments where, like, oh God, the pit in my stomach is back. Here's the early red card. Brad Guzan is off. They're bringing a guy that, what, they signed him to an emergency contract, basically?
He's loaned up from the USL 2 team, but all of the clubs, I think, made a signing like this for this year. But he is an Argentine U17 international, yeah. And he was brought to Atlanta United, I think, with the intention that he would play somewhat with the first team in training and have the opportunity to develop going forward. It wasn't like, here's a random college kid that we found just to fill numbers at the USL side.
I mean, either way, he was good. Wasn't perfect.
He's the Thomas Hasal of CCL.
Yeah, but he was good.
He was, yeah. It was a very CCL moment to have a guy who nobody had heard of 3 days before come in, and it wasn't just that, like, it was kind of a circus because, like, he couldn't catch the ball. Like, at any time the ball was hit, like, up, well, one time he caught it clean, but, like, he was bobbling everything and, like, it was spilling at the feet of the Alajuelense attackers, and, like, then he was making spectacular saves. It was wild. It was absolutely wild, and it ended up being a deserved result, I thought.
No Marcelino Moreno, by the way. You were kind of going through the things that were challenges for Atlanta United. That's one of their designated players. Yep. That's not, and to miss him, to miss Joseph, to have that red card, that's not a result that in Costa Rica that I know that any of us would expect in previous iterations. And that is the progress. That maybe that's something that we should start to expect. Maybe not with the red card circumstances, but that MLS teams can go there and do that and maybe should be going there and doing that.
So I think part of it is them expecting it of themselves. And you could see that in the body language, because in the past, like, there was naivete in these games and there was an intimidation factor. Mm-hmm. And the big question, the sort of the elephant in the room is, was that intimidation factor lacking in all four of these games because there were no fans? Would these games have played out differently if the stadiums were filled?
I think the other thing you have to bring up is all the pieces that are missing that Wiebe points out. And one of the ways that's going to be filled and has been filled is homegrowns. And homegrowns playing with that level of confidence, as Doyle said, which is part of, as we've talked about, what's being instilled is playing tournaments against Liga MX teams consistently, playing against Saprissa, playing in youth national teams. That's a big part of what MLS's next is. But then also just believing in yourself. And one of the ways MLS rosters are going to get to what Liga MX teams are is having quality coming out of the academy on top of the TAM and DP signings as the league improves and, you know, more international players want to come. And so we're going to talk to George Bello. Philly had big performances. Portland, obviously a little different, but Eric Williamson, a traded homegrown from DC. And then you look at what Toronto FC did. And, you know, Doyle joked about it being a USL team, but Bill Manning came into this year and said, you think we don't have depth? Ralph Priso and Jacob Schaffelberg and Nobel Akello and who am I missing? Jordan Peruso and Jaden Nelson. That's our depth. Those guys are getting opportunities. And in game one, that's what happened. And it's not, can we rush Pasuelo back and force him into 45 minutes? It's no, Nobel Akello is going to do a job next to Josie. He's going to cover some ground. We trust him. We trust Priso to play alongside Michael in midfield at altitude, first game of the year under a new coach against the Mexican champions. And this is something that MLS just didn't have going back a few years. And one of those things that's growing and was one of the most exciting parts of this week to me.
You also have, to stay on the Atlanta side, we mentioned Sosa. You're bringing in young, talented South Americans that aren't going to be overawed in these situations because that's what they've grown up with.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, but I don't know that.
In the past, they've certainly looked overawed, whether they're South American or North American or anywhere else. Like, MLS teams have struggled in these situations. And I think it's less to do with where they're getting players from than it is to do with the culture of these respective teams. And I think all four of the teams that we've seen so far, and hopefully the crew will make it five tonight, they got it right. They all got it right, and they all went out there for at least a half an hour and were actually the better team. And obviously, for various reasons, that kind of ended. It makes sense given that these teams are basically in preseason. But I think by setting the tone like that and playing with that level of confidence, it's not just 1 through 11. It ends up being the entire roster. And credit to the coaches and the organizations for that.
All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field. It is George Bello. You just won in Costa Rica, George. I've been a bit of a wet blanket about CCL, but I'm going to shed that, man. This is a historic result. This is a special result. This is what you went down there to do. How you feel?
I feel great, honestly. As everyone knows, it was a crazy game. Not what we expected at all, but we pulled through. I mean, I feel like all of us fought, and we showed like we really wanted this season, and I couldn't find a better way to start this kind of season than to have like a strong, hard-fought win like that. So everyone's really happy about it, but then we're still – the job's not done. Still got Tuesday to go. So
take us onto the field. Brad gets the red card. Who's talking? What's the conversation like for the group on the field knowing you're looking at man down for 45, 50 minutes going forward?
Yeah, I was kind of man at first because at first the ref put out yellow card. So we thought, okay, we're still in this. Like, we still got the full 11 and then probably the red, obviously. And we obviously got together and we just had to just lock in and tell ourselves, just make it to halftime, honestly. If we could just make it to halftime, we could regroup and know the game plan for the next half. And thankfully we did. We went in. Coach Gabby was very calm about everything, calmed us down. Told us that this is where we fight with our hearts now, and like since we're a man down, so we fight with our hearts and nothing else. But we have to show grit and just to get through the game, and that's what we did. And I feel like everyone played their part and everyone played their hearts out. So I'm really happy for everyone.
Man, fought with your hearts. That is a vibe check right there. Like Gabriel Heinze is that feels like a change. That feels like something I never would have heard from you guys in the last couple years. How has Gabby, as you call him, changed things? What's he like? How have you connected with him?
Yeah, he's a great coach and great guy on and off the field. He brings passion to the game, which I love. Like, he's so passionate. And whatever he wants, you'll get from him. So, I mean, he makes everything clear to everyone. He's always asking you to ask questions. He wants you to know everything about like how we're gonna play and like to the detail, which I love as well. So when a coach has that passion, that energy, it really translates to the players on the field too, as I hope you guys can tell as well. Because I mean, if everyone has that passion and he's correlating that to us as well, having that passion on the field is gonna help us in the long run. So yeah, I mean, I'm loving him so far, and it's obviously, I know he played my position as well when he was pro, so I've been learning a lot from him as well.
Just that, like, Man U and Argentine national team. Okay, teams.
Was that before your time, or were you, like, a guy who watched a lot of Gabriel Heinze at the highest level?
Before my time, but obviously highlights and stuff. But, like, yeah, he coaches the way he plays, I feel like. Just aggression, just hard work, playing with your heart, and just playing for your teammates, having teams back all the time. So, yeah, it's going to be a really exciting year, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Take us into, because you talked about the tactics and what he wants you to do, what your role is going to be, because we saw you playing high. We know you like to get into the attack. How does he want you to be a part of this team?
Yeah, I mean, the way he plays, he likes us to be moving all the time and having the ball, getting the ball on the move. So if a teammate takes away space, he always wants another one to cover that space that your teammate left. So for me, I mean, it was just being in a good position for my teammate, seeing when someone leaves a spot, I need to cover that space for them. And also just being in the right spots in case we turn the ball over on the defensive side and not being too caught up too high and just being smart about that. So I would say just positioning is very key for us this year and just knowing where to cover each other when we leave certain areas. So
I think your positioning on that PK call was perfect, George. PK gets called, you're up in the ref, you're separating him from the Alajuelense players. You're like, nah, man, you got, this is the call. You made the call. Stick with the call. Yeah, that was perfect.
I just had to. I saw all of them just trying to, like, crowd the ref. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to let him try to get into the head of the ref. You know, just give the ref a little bodyguard. Being the ref a little bodyguard for a second. Just getting him away, calming the scene. And thankfully, Barco executed and buried it. So
we love it, man. We love those moments. Those are the moments that maybe in the past we always look for MLS teams to kind of understand the temperature of the region of CONCACAF. And we've had a bunch of conversations recently, and it's been about the U23s and qualifying and all these other things, MLS and CCL, obviously, about understanding the moment, the differences, and what it takes to be successful in CONCACAF, particularly on the road. Like, where does that come from? How did you know that that was a moment for you to do that? How do we as a collective soccer culture get better in those moments and be like, ah, this is how I get that little bit of advantage?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like for me, it was just instinctive, honestly. I mean, I saw him, like, he called the penalty, of course, and then I saw all of them just around the refs. I'm like, we can't just let them, like, try to get into the ref's head. So, I mean, instinctively, I just ran up, and I was just like, just give him some space, like, trying to box him out, not trying to let the ref just, like, change his mind or some, like, crazy, some stuff happen. So I was like, yeah, it was just instinctive, honestly. I didn't really learn anywhere. I was just thought in the moment.
So talking about instincts, can we talk about what type of a legend Rocos Rios Novo is? Kid comes in out of nowhere, wins the game. It's wild save after save. Did you expect this? How legendary is he now?
Yeah, I mean, we've been training together, obviously, in preseason, and he's a baller for sure. So, I mean, I wasn't surprised by his performance at all. I mean, I know he has talent, and he showed it. So, I mean, I'm proud of him for sure. I'm sure it was crazy for him to even think that he wasn't going to think he was going to play. And when Brad gets to red, I'm sure his adrenaline was rushing, pretty nervous, but he went in and he looked like a vet to me. He played well and saved us, like you said, so I'm really proud of him. And that just shows, like, if one person goes down, we have another person to step up.
Is this like a team-wide trend? Are the young guys all getting mustaches? I mean, I'm looking from afar here. I'm trying to see if I think you got one. I think you are a bigote coming in.
You know, this part is growing, and this part, but the sides, I don't know. I think I've lost hope for that for now.
Oh, it's early days, George. You got a long time, man. It'll start to come in for you. It'll start to come in for you. You mentioned Barco, though, with the PK, and I've written in, I've thought about, and I want Ezekiel Barco to sort of have his year, where we all say, yeah, that is why the millions of dollars got paid. That is the player you've always been. You're now showing it. What have you seen from him in preseason? What do you think we should expect from Ezekiel Barco in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows he's a really talented player. And for me, I love playing with him. I feel like we have good chemistry as well. But yeah, he's a very special player, and I'm sure he's going to have a great season this year as well. In preseason, he was working hard, worked his butt off as well, like, as always. He has a good attitude. I feel like he's never a bad sport. So, I mean, I feel like he's up for a great year. He looks sharp to me. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing with him. I'm really looking forward to playing with him and seeing where it goes. But I'm sure he's going to have a great season.
What's that chemistry like? What do you do well that he likes with you? And what does he do that helps bring out the best in George Bello?
I would just say just knowing where each other are on the field. Because if he's playing on my side of the wing, he usually likes to cut in. With the ball, which gives me space to overlap, and he can play me, or just combining, giving 1-2s, like, we just know where each other are, so I feel like that's where the chemistry is, and I feel like it's just natural, just playing soccer. But yeah, I would say the main thing is he likes to really, if he's on the left side, he likes to really cut in and do his little thing, and I have, like, the width, which is my thing, just going back and down and back the line, so I feel like it works out for both of us.
Just waving everyone out of the way. Barco, go to the right wing, get out of my way, George Bello. And then when you get to that end line and get into that space, last year you didn't have Joseph Martinez in the middle. Now you've got a guy who can basically dunk on anyone in this league when you get it up there. How does he look? How exciting is it to have him back in the group?
Yeah, it's so exciting. I'm so happy for him. Seeing what he went through, having that terrible injury, and then him just working hard, getting back to where he is now, I'm just super happy for him, and I was super happy to see him come in the game. But yeah, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a really exciting season, and it's really a blessing to be able to play with all these special players, in Joseph and Barco and all the whole team. So it's going to be a really special season, hopefully, and I'm really looking forward to playing with all of them.
What's he like, Joseph, behind the scenes? I mean, we see him on the field, like, jumping up in front of
Joseph. He's very excited.
I do love Joseph. Right, jumping up in front of, like, the fireworks, scowling, looking back at goalkeepers, just, like, playing angry in the best possible way. But I cannot imagine he's like that all the time. He's got to have a looser side with you guys.
Yeah, of course. He's a chill guy. I love him, honestly. Yeah, he's a great guy. He likes to joke around a lot sometimes, obviously. But when it comes to the field, he's all seriousness. That's what you can't miss about him, for sure. But, yeah, off the field is a really cool guy, really down to earth, humble. Like, yeah, you can talk to him anytime you want about anything. So he was really down to earth, like I said. And anybody can approach him, he'll talk to you. He's a great guy. So
you mentioned all the world-class talent on this team. A lot of it comes from outside of the U.S., outside of the area. You're a local guy. What does it mean to rep Atlanta in these games, repping Georgia, and being, you know, kind of the heart of that, really, in this starting lineup and in this group?
It means a lot. Just coming through, playing locally, close to my house when I was younger, to playing the academy, to getting signed. It's just a dream come true, honestly, and I couldn't ask for anything else. It's a blessing. And like I said, I just love representing my hometown. I'm playing with Atlanta, and I know my friends and family are proud of me always, and just being able to play in front of them when we have home games and just having that hometown support is always means it means everything. So I'm really happy, and like I said, I just can't wait for the season.
So non-COVID world, everyone's allowed in the stadium. How many tickets does George Bello have to get for friends and family on an average weekend?
I would say maybe around six to ten, maybe.
Oh, that's not bad.
I thought it was going 60. I was like, yeah. 60. Yeah,
nah, woo. I'm not that big, Tommy.
Oh, man. What did you think, though, George? Because there may come a time here where Atlanta is not where you're playing. When you see sales out of MLS like Brian Reynolds, when you see Reggie Cannon or Joe Scally go, when you think about your own career, like how much do you allow yourself to dream, to sort of like plot out where maybe you can go with this?
Yeah, obviously, I've said before, it's a dream to play in Europe for sure. It's one of my dreams. But for now, I'm really just locked in with Atlanta United, just trying to focus on the season. But obviously, I have in the back of my head that obviously it'll be a dream to play in Europe. But for me to get to Europe, I have to play well here, obviously. So I'm really just focused for here, and that's my only focus, improving myself here, because I know I still have a lot to learn. I'm nowhere where I can be or need to be, so I'm still young as well, still learning a lot of things about the game. So, I mean, my main focus is just improving myself as a player here, can keep on maturing on the field, getting reps, getting games, and see where that takes me. So I'm just focused and loving it here in Atlanta.
It's not just Atlanta, though. You made your national team debut this year. You've talked a little bit about how much it meant to you. What was that experience like? And what's the conversations like with that coaching staff? Because, I mean, let's all just say it. There's an opportunity at left back. You know you're one of those players in there. How much are they talking to you? How often are you in touch with them?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that was another dream come true. Getting a debut for the national team, that's something you dream of as a kid. Playing for the national team. So making that debut was just a dream come true. And it was crazy that like a year ago, I didn't play the whole season. And then now I was able to make my national team debut. So it was just a blessing. And I was really happy with that. And yeah, regarding what they said, I had really good feedback from that camp. I learned so much as well from Greg and Jason. So it was a good camp for sure. And I had good feedback, and they said they'll keep in touch with me, so I'm happy about that. So right now, I just focus, and whatever comes my way, but I'm just going to keep trying to play and keep trying to improve myself. And hopefully, God willing, the opportunities will come with the national team.
Where do you feel, George, like you made the biggest strides in the last year? Because you got you got into that Atlanta United lineup for the first time and really stayed there. You got in with the U.S. Looking internally, where did you feel like, okay, I really took a step forward here, and this is still an area that I want to improve?
I'd say it took a step forward is, I mean, most importantly, staying healthy. I mean, that's probably the main thing, staying healthy, looking after my body, doing little things like before and after training to make sure my body is good and to prevent those kind of things from happening again. So I'll say that, majority wise, just taking care of my body. And then also just getting reps in the games and being consistent. Cause obviously I needed to be consistent to be able to keep playing those games. So consistency was one of my main strides I made in. Not just having one good game, then the next game really bad to where I can't play the next, but like just being on a consistent level. And specifically, I'll say I did better on my 1v1 defending. I've gotten better at that. I still have a lot to learn with that area in defending, but I feel like I made some strides there. And also where I would say I want to keep working on is like my defensive positioning. Just being in the right spot at the right time. Cause I know I'm fast, but if I'm at the right spot defensively before the action even happens, it'll prevent me from running more than I have to. So just being in the right position defensively-wise and just in the final third, finishing the product, because I feel like I'm getting the right spots, but just to finish that action and just being able to finish that cross, finish that pass, finish that shot, and just being clinical in the final third. So that's what I'll say I want to work on.
My understanding is I think you were a center mid coming up, and then you got converted to fullback.
Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I played like the 10 attacking mid. I played striker, and I went to my first national team camp, and then they put me left back, and I was like, what? But yeah, stuck ever since then. So yeah, that's how.
What? How did you get convinced that that was the right move for you? How did you accept? I mean, everyone wants to be the number 10. How did you accept that fullback is what you can do?
Honestly, in that camp when I played it, I was having fun with it. Like, I liked it a lot, honestly. So I was like, okay, this can really be my position that I can thrive in, because it fitted my attributes that I was good at on the field. So, like I said, I just started having fun with it, and I was like, okay, and it just stuck from there. So
it was working out pretty well for you right now. Before I let you go, George, look ahead for us to next week. To this season, what are your goals and what's the reality in CONCACAF Champions League? Like, I'm trying to stay positive, but we know the history for MLS in this competition. How far do you guys think you can go? And then what is a realistic goal for Atlanta United in 2021? What are you guys talking about that you want to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, for CONCACAF, obviously, I'd be shaming the team if I wouldn't say that we want to win it all. We want to go all the way. I feel like we're very capable of it. We have a really talented team. So, I mean, obviously, the goal is to win. The goal is to always win. So, I'll say win CONCACAF. But for now, the goal is for Tuesday is to close it out and just move on to the next round. And then regarding the season, I would say just get back to the Atlanta United winning ways. Obviously, last year, I feel like, speaking for me and the team, we all feel like it wasn't good enough. It wasn't what Atlanta United represented in the way we played and the results we were getting. So I feel like this year, just the main goal is to get back to winning ways, get back to that real Atlanta United style of play, and just winning games and playing with our hearts no matter what. And no matter what the circumstances may be in the game, still giving it our all and seeing where it takes us throughout the season.
All about the Corazon, man.
Five stripes.
Gabby's jacking me up through you right now. Like, I am ready for this. This is going to be awesome. Thank you, George, for joining us. Good result in Costa Rica. We know the work's not done, but we're watching real closely next week, man.
Sounds good.
Oh, man, it's all about the heart. The Corazon. It's about Gabby, baby. I'm inspired by that. You can feel that maybe Atlanta is back, that maybe that soul has returned, that maybe what we're talking about as far as collective swagger and belief and just sort of like disregard of whatever it is that stands in front of you, the reasons why people can't say you can't do it, is maybe going away. It felt like Atlanta, as you said, Dave, the last couple of years were just waiting for a time to collapse, especially without Joseph Martinez. Well, they didn't have full Joseph, and they didn't collapse. And George Bello seems like a great kid.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Big George Bello fan. This pod is now a George Bello pod.
What are we not?
I thought this was a Noble Akello pod.
It's close.
Oh, speaking of, let's do it. Let's get right into Noble Akello. He's smooth at times. He looked good. Why won't you play him more, Toronto FC? Maybe this is the year. I mean, 1-1 in Lyon. I know that Lyon had a ton of chances late in the game, but they missed them.
Well, throughout the entire game.
Yeah, that's true.
Joel Campbell is early running for MLS MVP with the misses he put in.
I mean, but that was, have you ever seen a more beautiful miss? Honestly,
no. Oh, the one.
Oh my God! He hit that post so flush, like it was unbelievable.
The highlight of the game was a Lyon player took Richie Larea to the end line, puts it across the goal, and it's a tap in, and Alex Bono gets half of a finger to it to throw off the attacker, and the camera cuts to him. And the eyes he gave the attacker of like, whoa.
Yeah.
You almost scored that, but you didn't. It was like amazing. And it was one of those moments where you're like, this kid's like a Syracuse kid playing at Lyon right now. What is going on?
I mean,
it was
Alex Bono's been through that, though. He was there in 2018. So that, like, again, even though Toronto were missing at least half their starters, I think, there's no intimidation factor. They were able to go down there to the reigning Liga MX champions. And I know Lyon are having a tough season right now, but like, these are the reigning champions. The game's at 6,000 feet. Because of injury and illness, Toronto have basically only played 90 minutes together this preseason. And they go out there and they were the better team for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. They really were. There were a couple of times where Akello found Schaffelberg on the overlap and were just like playing him into the channel and he couldn't quite pull it off. There were a couple chances. Like, I thought Josie's movement in the box was really good a couple of times. And by going out there and setting the tone like that and being the protagonists, I think it gave them the confidence as a group to be like, you know what, we can get the result that we want here. And now, granted, they had to get lucky. They absolutely, like, they got incredibly lucky with some of those misses. But you need luck to get to get through a tie like this, and you need luck to make a run. And so, like, hopefully they didn't use it all up, but like, against the run of play, a 1-1 draw ended up being, it wasn't entirely undeserved.
And part of CCL is Toronto outplays Lyon for 35 minutes, then Lyon scores one of the best goals I've ever seen out of nowhere. But that's CCL, right? Is normally a Liga MX team or a Honduran or a Costa Rican side punishes an MLS team against the run of play and then takes the momentum and runs from there, and the MLS side isn't able to find their way back. And we come on here and we say, I actually think they were good. Even though they lost 4-1, they were good in spots. I like that 30-second, you know, down the left wing when Akello and Schaffelberg linked up. That wasn't the case this time for Toronto. And so I think it's credit to them, one, for staying connected, staying a part of the game. Chris Armas went for the win at the end. So there's confidence awesome. For you.
I like that is the way to approach it with away goals mattering so much in these ties. I think that was good risk assessment from Armas, because if they had gotten the second one, and to be clear, like there were a couple of times mm-hmm. where they were like one pass away from it.
Or Patrick Mullins was just getting the ball out of his feet away when he got put through on one of them.
Like that would have been, it doesn't end the series, but it puts them in a very strong position. What did we think of the first game of Toronto FC under Chris Armas? Because they played kind of like a janky 4-4-2 with a 4-4-1-1, if you want to call it that. They weren't super compact, but they had some ideas.
Can we just also put in the context of, we said, oh, they're missing players. It was, you know, a lot of young guys. Like, they're missing the MVP. They're missing Alejandro Pozuelo. That TFC team that made the run doesn't do that with Jovinko not there. Like, and I'm not saying they're going to make this run, but just to get this result without an MVP for MLS teams would be outside the realm of possibility 2, 3, 4 years ago, I think. And that they did it, I think, changes at least perception of reality, and hope that, as you say, Doyle, that trickles down to all teams again in this competition. They're missing their best center back. Chris Mavinga was a huge part of that run.
Yep.
They were missing Jonathan Osorio. Mr. Backheel, another huge part of that run. Creativity. But I think I wouldn't look at this game and take a bunch of notes and be like, aha, Chris Armas is on to this, 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 and this. He's going to continue to do these things formationally or tactically. In large part for me, it felt like they just said, hey, these first 30 minutes, we want to make an impact, be aggressive, and then they survived. And that they could scramble and survive, I think that is a huge credit to all those players, as well as Armas, in a very short period of time when he admitted they weren't on the same page, to find something that they could all sort of understand and rally around and then get a result from. But I wouldn't look at this game and be like, 4-4-2 is going to be it. This is the role that this guy's going to play. There's just so many different pieces that when you put into this team, change everything.
Like, I do think 4-4-2 is going to be it, though.
You do?
Yeah. And I think there is a decent chunk of what happened that
Pozuelo under Josie.
I think so. I think that's how it works for him. And I think when you look at the Red Bulls over the last few years, they tinkered with the 4-2-2-2. There's holes in the way it works. But I think maybe this talent fits it pretty well. And it's a way to fuse what's happening, which is they're not going to become the New York Red Bulls in 2015 and 16. But they're also not going to be Toronto FC at the same time that was dominating possession, right? What's about to happen is trying to fuse both of these things to take a little from what Chris has had success with in New York and take a little with what Toronto's had success under Greg Vanney and do that going forward, which for TFC is huge because they normally couldn't win games that weren't played the way they wanted it to be played. And for Chris Armas, I think one of the things he saw with New York was there are limitations to what all-out pressing can do, and teams can, especially in the playoffs, throw a wrench in it. So this team should be the fusion of what he wants them to be. Whether it works or not is a whole other question. Whether you can get it done this year is going to be tough. But I think you saw the beginnings of some of those ideas in this game. And one of the huge parts about what happened was, I think, Josie being up for it. And like, you saw him engaged. You saw him a few moments early on initiating the press, getting players around him. You saw the energy he had, you know, kind of like riling up the subs as he came off to get them going and ready to come in. They need Josie and Michael to be leaders. They need them to be engaged. And you saw it in game one.
So what? It's Michael and Delgado. Then it's Osorio and De Leon. And then it's Josie and Pozuelo. And that's the 4-2-2-2.
I don't know because, like, Noel Kello's got to be out there, right? I know he only played 45 minutes, but he looked good. Like, he looked like a game changer. I thought Preso looked good.
Yeah.
You know, they're really high on Jaden Nelson and Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy. as well. Like, those are two high level prospects, and like, kids that age are getting minutes for other good teams in MLS, and Toronto have one of the richest talent bases in terms of, you know, local academy to pull from of any team in the league. So they have to figure out a better balance of how to work these guys into meaningful roles, because all of those guys seem like they have the potential to be high-level players.
TBD on Josie. I mean, I know that, Dave, you said last night, don't read too far into it, but he did kind of like, wasn't a limp, it wasn't
a
hobble.
It's fair to be worried. I think it's fair to be worried.
There was a hand on a hamstring, and just, I just don't, that's not a good, it's not a good sign. Hopefully he's fine for next week's second leg. What'd you think, Doyle, of Michael in this game? Because there were a lot of times where he sort of dropped deep, played the first pass, and then he bolted. He was just like, I'm getting high. I'm going into attacking positions.
I thought that pretty much covers it. I thought the way that they played put a lot of the game at his feet, which was a good idea in this situation. And he had a really good two-way game. He looked quicker and fresher than he did at the end of last year. But it does remind me of the start of last year, you know, when he, that first game at the MLS's back tournament, he looked amazing. It's like, oh, Michael Bradley finally got a rest. He's could be back. And then he kind of started to look his age really quick. So we'll see. But I thought he was really, really good. I thought having Preso there as kind of more of a guy to just clean up and hold and be kind of a safety valve made a lot of sense. And the other thing is, like, Michael Bradley's still so smart about timing his runs into the box and being that third man option.
City's on fire right now.
Right? I'm getting the fire department. You're getting, he's so smart. So it just makes sense as a force magnifier and attack to put him in a position where he can make those runs and can have that influence in the box.
We're 50 minutes in. We'll never get to it all if we don't move on. We'll talk more on Monday to preview these second legs. Also, that's going to be our prediction show for the year. So that's always a must listen show. We'll try to convince Anders to let us go like 2-3 hours, see how that works out for us. Philadelphia Union. First experience, dip their toe in the water, go to Saprissa. I know Saprissa is not the Saprissa that they have been in years past, but to get a 1-0, to walk out of there with a win, to have a little scuffle and to have your guys not be the ones backing down in any way. I mean, I think if you're Jim Curtin, you have to be really, really excited about this result. You have to be excited that Kasper Schabilko got back and Jose Martinez did too. I don't know if it was gamesmanship on Jim's part, but I read a ton of his quotes leading into this, and they were all sort of like, we be Eeyore-y about the health of his team. They're like, oh, well, we're not going to have any forwards. They're all out.
Listen, and then, Jim's a straight shooter, so yeah, if he said it's true.
Yeah, that's what I was going on. I was like, I trust Jim. Whatever Jim says publicly is probably the real deal. Well, no, here's Kasper Schabilko.
Sergio Santos was out, and that's
true.
The whole team.
And Corey Burke. And Corey Burke.
And El Seno.
That's true.
And Jack DeVries.
There you go. Boom. Jack DeVries. That's
but look,
what
it's a
about.
Different game if they don't have Jose Martinez and Schabilko. Schabilko scores the goal. Jose Martinez is maybe the best player on the field in this game, but there is a feeling to this
Union
team.
I don't think it's a maybe.
Yeah, it's probably not.
Awesome. Yeah.
There's a feeling to me with this Union team of like they've heard the narratives. They know that they missed two best 11 players, but the replacements are coming out of their team that they signed to be those guys in the first place. And hopefully Fontana takes a step forward. Like, we can do this. We're still elite. Don't talk about us like that. Watch us get results.
I don't even think they know. I don't think that they have any idea. I don't think they care. I don't think it matters. I think the point is they built something, and it's not reliant on one or two players. It's a system, and I know Jim Curtin's had to change his systems over the years because he's had 8 different people above him, and the players have changed and all that. But I think the way they looked yesterday was the same that they looked last year. And the idea is this is how the Philadelphia Union play going forward. And so I think they believe in that. They believe as a group that they're better. A lot of individuals in this team think that they're underrated. So that's fair, Weeby. But I just think for this team, what was huge was they looked like the Philadelphia Union from last year. And that's what was massive about this game was, one, they're going to carry it over. And two, to do it in this environment and this performance. Because you mentioned, this isn't the Saprissa maybe of past years. But the thing about this Saprissa group is everyone's a veteran. So you rolled out there with a team that had never played in CONCACAF before. And as we've said, this region is so unique in what it challenges you with. That's why players from Argentina and Europe do struggle in this competition. Doyle, it is. That is one of the things that we miss with CONCACAF, and we talk about Olympic qualifying, World Cup qualifying, and all those things. There is nothing like it, whether it's harder or easier than other things. Not saying that, but it's completely unique. These players step into that environment against a team. Oh, you don't like that I put a qualifier on unique?
Yeah, you can't say something is so unique or complete. You can modify it, but not by degrees, right? Something is unique.
CONCACAF is unique.
Yes.
And you're playing a team of Kendall Waston. Now I'm going to forget
Christian
Bolaños. Yeah. All players that have been here so many times before.
Aubrey David.
And so, yeah. And so this team felt confident and stepped up. I thought the first 30, 35 minutes from Philly was awesome as well. Bedoya's ability to read space, the understanding from the team of the way the diamond works to suck players in and launch him into space, and Baizo reading the space around him. Shabilko, I think we talked about in our preview, he needs to be the Shabilko from 2-3 years ago, where he was a great goal scorer, but also a creator and a guy who floats into space and can help you build up. And you saw that throughout lots of parts of this game. So it was an awesome performance from Philly. I'm jacked about what Atlanta did, but I actually think this may have been the best performance so far this week.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that it was the best performance of the four teams when you consider the degree of difficulty, because it is Saprissa. And I know they're not as good as Alajuelense, but Philly were like just clearly the better team on the field for the vast majority of that game. And they did it by, as you said, playing basically the same exact system that they did last year. Now, there were some differences. I thought that the shuttlers got a little higher. And part of that might have been as a way to get Mbaizo behind the left wing back for Saprissa, which is, of course, exactly how they got the game's only goal. Fontana drifting off that front line as almost like a, second number 10, as opposed to doing what you would expect out of a second forward, which is to run the channels a little bit and stretch the game out. So there were some wrinkles. There were some different things, but it was still Philadelphia Union Soccer. And I think, if you sell $15 million worth of players, you probably want at least $5 million worth coming back in. But there's also like this weird chemistry advantage from just plucking guys out of the depth chart or off the USL team and being like, no, you're the starter now. This is how we do things here. There are exceptions, right? Like Leon Flock, they went out and they bought him. He had a very good, I thought, performance in his first game for the Union. I wouldn't be shocked if there's at least one more move coming for this team. But, it was just like this team knows who it is. They know exactly who they are, and they were able to hit that level within the group immediately and then impose it upon a really good team that's in the middle of its season and do so on the road in a game that had actual stakes. That's impressive.
It's got to be special for Jim Curtin after everything he's gone through in Philly. He is obviously Philly TID, but he's been through, as you said, Dave, a lot of sort of different iterations, both as his job goes, but also the people around him. To have this be his 100th victory with the club, the first game in CCL, to win that game, to do it in Saprissa with some of the injuries that they did have, it's got to be super special for them. Now, there's still a job to be done in Philly. But the Union are one of those teams that I look at and think that it's going to be even better at home for them. Like, it's going to be that extra week to get guys rested, to get somebody back from injury, to understand and to build confidence and to kind of play a little bit free. Because I don't think the expectations on them were huge. Maybe internally they are. I think they're going to get through, and they got a path, just like Atlanta United do. If they can handle business in the second leg, it's an MLS opponent or a Costa Rican one. You get to delay Liga MX a little bit. You get to build into the tournament.
I will be disappointed if Philadelphia don't get through. It would be, at this point, it would be a choke if they don't get through.
Well, that's what I'm saying about the past and what it's telling us. It's telling us that MLS teams should adjust we should adjust our expectations. And I'm mostly speaking to me in the doom and gloom there, that the first round should be something you expect to get through, no matter if it's first game of the year, no matter if you have injuries. That's what we're saying we're building towards, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about winning it. It's about winning in circumstances that are not ideal. It's about proving it that you are the equal of Liga MX and sometimes the better, and certainly are the better of the rest of the region. We'll see if MLS can do that in the second legs. A 2-2 draw in Honduras was a good result for the Portland Timbers. Banged one off the back of a goalkeeper. Diego Valeri. Well done. You know, had a little some shaky moments to get back to 2-2, but you'll take a multi-goal scoreless draw any day. Any day.
Wait, a multi-goal scoring draw. Yeah,
you can't do anything. Sorry.
Yeah, multi-goal. No, 2-2 on the road in a game where in a series where away goals count. Like, that's a good result. Kasman and I had this discussion on Twitter Spaces after Tuesday's games, though. Like, there has to be this weird kind of disappointment for the Timbers, because if you had offered them 2-2 before the game, I'm sure they would have taken it. If you had said, you're going to play this well and you're only going to get a 2-2 out of it, then you'd be like, oh, damn, what's wrong with our transition defense? And that's a question that they had to ask and would hopefully have answered after last year. So I think Timbers fans should be, you know, stoked, because they did put themselves in a position where they don't need to play the greatest game in the world in order to get through. But also, like, there has to be some frustration, because twice they went ahead and twice within 5 minutes they gave up an equalizer way too easily.
Now, I'll say, for as a neutral and probably a Portland fan, one of the things that you come out of this game is the level of intensity, ownership, whatever you want to call it, of Eric Williamson's performance is huge, because everyone else in that midfield obviously is a legend, but they're getting up there, and Eric Williamson has to give you a ton of minutes this year, and you want to see a level of improvement from him. Can he be the guy whenever Diego Chara in 40 years, when Diego Chara is ready to retire, or Diego Valeri, whatever it is? And you saw that in game one from Eric Williamson, and I think you saw from the fullbacks, they want them to be pure attacking players. And they went out and got two experienced fullbacks, one from Argentina, one from Mexico. They made mistakes defensively. They made mistakes in transition, as did Eric Williamson, by the way, on, I think it was the first goal, the second goal, where he got schooled in the attacking half to allow it to go the other way. But I think that's the things that will come over the course of the year. You saw the pure talent and the natural inclinations from all these players. And that's what Portland wanted for this season. And all of this was without Sebastian Blanco, was without Jeremy Abobasi, and then Niashkoda will come back at some point later this year. I'm not super high on Felipe Mora, but in a game like this, you see what's sort of changed, which is he's a Liga MX player playing down in Honduras, where he is a higher quality, and he didn't finish three or four chances he could have, but he did finally get one, and you see what he can do. And if you had Jeremy Abobasi in that spot, I think you would have seen a win for Portland, but this was the result that they needed. They didn't have to spend Blanco on a tough field in a tough environment, so you save him for another week to come back, and if you can get the result at the second leg, it's Club America beat Olympia 2-1. It looks like that's who they'll be matched up with. Now you're 3 weeks into the season. Blanco's back. Now you start to be in a place where you can legitimately be competitive against a team like that.
That's encouraging. Congratulations, everybody, across the board in MLS. Four results. Another one tonight. We'll see. Crew, Real Esteli. Esteli has won the last three Nicaraguan First Division tournaments. Two Clausuras and an Apertura. They've done it with a 24-year-old manager.
The Nicaraguan Nagelsmann.
Yeah, I mean,
shout out Holver John Flores. Go check out his piece.
Yeah, Holver Flores. I mean, it's an incredible piece. I think back at what I was doing at 24 and the level of maturity and professionalism that he's got to have.
He went to Europe and learned coaching. Yeah. You went to Europe, right? Did you learn a lot of coaching while you were in Europe?
No, no, I didn't. Not that kind of coaching. Not that
you
kind of
you fluent in Polish now, right?
I think I can get a beer in Greenpoint. That's about as far it's as I can get with expected. My Polish. Yeah, that didn't work out for me in that way. MLS news dump here, and we'll of course hit all these on Monday and preview the second legs in a little bit more detail. Just run through this before we get to the mailbag. Best to Jeff Lerenowitz. 16 years in MLS, retired from the game, decided to call it quits, had his resurgent with Atlanta United that looked like maybe it wasn't going to come. I mean, had some down years in between or not up to the level that we saw in Atlanta at least, but what a pro he was, what an ambassador for MLS he was, and just wishing him the best in retirement. Interested to see what he does with his post-playing days. How about Ramon Avila? It's done. Juan Chope to Minnesota United. This changes. I'm now on this has been a universal theme here. I am now on the Doyle and Goss boat with Minnesota. If Avila is healthy and can stay healthy, he is going to be a really good player in this league, and he's going to make all those guys around him look really good.
Yeah, and you can read more about that on MLS.com, of course.
Yes. Like, maybe he's what houses he's looking at, etc. What do we think about Minnesota United's ambition.
I had them second in the West because I expected they would make a center forward signing. And I think that's already an example of how it's all changed in 2 years with Minnesota, right? There's question marks. Obviously, they come out of the gates as an expansion team and they didn't look ready to play in MLS. And now we're at a point where you can look at their roster, see holes and say, well, we know they're going to work to fill it. And that's not the case with every MLS team. So this is a team that I think they're in win now mode. They understand that. We mentioned it when we did their preview. They've added depth at every position. So they're ready to compete over the course of a long season. They've got MLS veterans as a backup at most spots. And now you bring in the last piece you needed, which was that center forward. Reynoso is an elite chance creator in this league. There'll be chances out there. You were just looking for someone to come in and finish them off. And you've got a Boca Juniors veteran to do it. And he talked about in coming, well, Bebelo told me how much he loved this club, how much they wanted to win. I wanted to be here. So it took a year and a half to get Bebelo done, but you got two for the price of one now. So it was worth all the time and energy. Mark Watson also got a ton of frequent flyer miles going down and spending time in Buenos Aires. So this seems to have worked out for everyone. I think last year we questioned, could they cover for Ike? They showed that they could, and that's still something they're going to have to do. But if they're an elite offensive team, then they have enough pieces defensively to get through. They've got depth in central midfield. They've got options on the wing. It sounds like that might get even deeper for them. So this is a legitimate supporter shield, an MLS Cup contender right now. And I know Doyle's got his tears coming out. I think they're in the top five in this league, and they have to be tier one.
Yeah, I agree with this signing and with
not tier one. No, they're not tier one.
How many
tier one is Columbus and LAFC.
Okay.
The next tier.
You and your elite closed tiers and two teams in one tier.
This is like we're teasing my column for next week. Tiers of MLS.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. I mean, I think Ramon Avila, both as a player, but also as sort of a cultural figure. He's powerful and he's been really productive when he's been in form and fit. The fact that this team, as you said, Dave, go look at their expansion roster and the players they signed and the profiles and from where, and to go get a Finnish international who's probably going to be playing in Euros, to go get a Slovakian international probably going to be playing in Euros, to go get the center forward and a 10 from Boca and have it just be like, hey, this is what we do. That is a huge, huge turnaround. And just organizationally, the vision, the ambition, and then the execution in the transfer market. So congratulations to Minnesota United. It seems like you're going to get a left winger as well. Anders is not liking this right now. He's very much still in his Sounders mode. Like, wait for opening day. We got you in the playoffs.
I mean, Minnesota, they're just going to start a DP on the wing, and Seattle's going to start me and maybe Nuhu Tolo on the wing. So
they're not going to start anybody on the wing. Yeah, they're going to play with a 3-5-2 with wingbacks.
So I'm sure this center forward coming from Boca Juniors won't be as good as Freddie Montero at age 36.
Whoa, this has escalated.
Vancouver, baby. Cascadia, Vancouver.
We didn't talk about Alfredo Morales to NYCFC much, did we? Ronnie Dyla says that James Sands might be playing some center back. Doyle, what do you think of that?
Doyle's upset.
No, it's fine. He's shown he could play that position at a high level. I don't think it's his best long-term fit. I think his upside is a ball winning D-mid is much higher, but like if you're only going to make one signing during the offseason and it's at a position where you already have four other players, you're going to have to scramble the lineup a little bit. So
FC Dallas went out and signed a winger here. Salbosh Shun. I think I said that right. It's going to take some practice from us, but he has a good record in the Hungarian First Division, 14 goals, 10 assists, and 55 appearances. Still just 20. Seems like a very FC Dallas signing. Go get a young winger who is unproven but has some good numbers in the past and see if you can elevate him. We'll see if it works for them.
I think Yadier O'Brien and Freddie Vargas scored against Austin FC. Yeah. Friendly yesterday.
My spies at that game were raving about Yadier O'Brien. Just raving about him. So maybe Dallas finally hit on one of these attacking signings.
Tom Boger
only takes one.
Tom Bogert's been busy here. Sure. Inter Miami have a 4DP issue. The Athletic is also reporting on this. It's pretty straightforward. They have 4DPs. Blaz Matuidi is going to have to be one. Mateus Pellegrini is one as well. So they got to figure out a way to rectify that before roster compliance, which happens right before the season starts. So that is one to follow very, very closely. Also, I believe the news is now official. We're just taping this. I see the emails coming through. I see the numbers popping up as far as the discovery rights from FC Cincinnati. The Galaxy got their left winger. It is not Christian Pavone. Seems that is probably going to be over because they went and spent reportedly $6 million on Kevin Cabral from Valencians in League Two. What do we think about that? That is a hefty investment. It's a five-year deal. It is up to $350K in GAM plus a first-round super draft pick for just the discovery rights, which, by the way, FC Cincinnati are almost certainly going to flip that GAM straight away for an international spot that they need. I mean, this is a big move. This is a big move by the Galaxy. Reports are that he is not going to be a guy that would fit into the 22 or Young Money or whatever we're calling it. I don't know. It's not official yet. Designation. This is a sign of intent, and it's not necessarily, though his stats in League 2 are quite good, one that jumps off the page just on paper.
I'm trying to take that in. I don't know that that's totally true. I think it's different for MLS, right? And you look at basically outside...
different for the Galaxy.
Right. And you look at outside of the top three, big two maybe teams in France, and a lot of what they do is rehab projects and trying to sell them into bigger teams in Europe. And that's what this is. He came out of the PSG Academy, Monaco. Am I getting this right or wrong here? I'm floating out here.
Yeah, I'm going to let you float.
I pulled my notes down on it, so I don't remember. But he came out of a big academy. He's had a big year this year at 21 years old. I think it's 7 goals, 4 assists over the course of this year. And I think the idea is he can come in and be productive now at 21 years old at a position of need. And there's still sell-on ability as you go through it. Even if you're selling for a number similar to what you brought him in, if he's productive in this league and you get $5 or $7 million on the back end of this, that allows the Galaxy to continue to improve their team in the future. This isn't, Zlatan's the first example that comes to mind, but other players where you're buying them and that's, yeah. Although Alessandrini was 27 and okay, whatever. This isn't the end of the goal for them. So I think that this makes a lot of sense for a club that they're not done yet. No DP signing they were going to make here was going to put them over the top to be an MLS Cup contender this year. So it makes sense to make a signing here that you think is promising, maybe open up a market for yourself going forward, but also give yourself some flexibility to continue to be able to move this player or bring someone else in over the course of the next few years under Greg Vanney. So I think a lot of that makes sense. And I like that signing from that point of view. And then from on the field, it makes sense because it was a position of need. They've improved both wing spots now to try and create chances for Chicharito. I still have no idea who's starting in central midfield for this team. I hope it's not Sasha Kljestan for the course of the year. And that's not a knock on Sasha. It's just we've reached the point where you need someone better and more, and can play the full season alongside Jonah Dos Santos. That's my big question mark for them. But there's no question that the roster...
It'll be Dos Santos and Legette, right?
And who's the 10?
The some combo of Sasha, Victor Vasquez, and
Efra.
Maybe Efra.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty good, right? Isn't that what you want?
I guess so. I guess that's what I want. I mean, it depends. That's what I want. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I mean, there's openings for Efra there because you know that probably the two older guys can't stay healthy for the full season. But then the pressure is not entirely on Efra. I don't know. We'll see. Galaxy going to be fascinating this year. Hernan Losada came out and said DC aren't fit enough. He kind of called him fat. I mean, Julian Gressel has a podcast now, which I went and checked out. It's called Z Soccer Podcast. It's him and Fabian Herbers. So they're just talking, you know, German guy to German guy about Major League Soccer.
Biggie Strong right there.
Oh, yeah. And right. Julian said that instead of doing the body fat pinch test, which they'd always done in the past, and he said he's like body fat was like 8%. They had him do a full body scan and it popped at 14%. And apparently Hernan Losada is not happy about the physical composition of his players. He came out he said to the Washington Post, we were not prepared enough. We're not fit enough. We can play how we want for 60 minutes right now. So it'll be interesting to see both the style and how quickly they can adapt. But that's a little note from DC United.
Is the extra time crew going to do?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That actually would maybe be good. Some good content. Like, I don't know if I want to see that like report, but boy, yeah, we would.
I got a gym appointment in half an hour.
Exactly. So I'm hearing Bobby Warshaw right now tell me like, hey, you need to just do 100 kettlebell swings a day. Maybe I should go do that. All right. Yeah. Mailbag time 401-206-0MLS extra time at MLSsoccer.com. What do we got, Dave?
Kale from Cincinnati, who makes a great point. Did Alajuelense just get CONCACAF'd by Atlanta? Is up, down. Alajuelense got screwed on the call,
yeah,
for one, on the penalty kick. And then, as we said, they should have outplayed Atlanta. They didn't. They lose 1-0 at home. Is up down?
I hope it is. I sure hope it is, but we shall find out.
And then we've got Marty Salerno, who says, excited about CCL. Wish there was a printable bracket a la March Madness. We probably should have handled that ourselves and put something out. So good reminder for 2022, if we ever get there. And he also says, when you talk about how hard this is on MLS teams due to the schedule, isn't it better this year that the final rounds are finally in the fall? We haven't talked a ton about that because Andrew already eliminated all the MLS teams.
Yeah, but that was the reverse jinx. Like, I got too bought into my reverse jinx, I think. So I'm trying to pull myself out. But yeah, you said it. This is a great opportunity, and it's about survival to start, because you know that in the end, these teams are going to be in a completely different position than any MLS team getting to this point has been in the past. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen prime October in-form teams doing it. Now, the flip side of that is, if you're a coach and you get there, there's multiple things to build up to, right? You've also got a playoff race you're thinking about. You have the playoffs on the other side, and now you have CCL to be built in. But look, if Toronto FC in particular, I would think about, could find a way to like slow play Josie and Pozuelo and get their team healthy and understand what Armas wants to do, they could be a team that really comes into October being like, yeah, we got to the point we were dreaming of back in April, and now it's money time. Maybe it's our turn. We're winning this thing. I'm back, baby. I'm back. Not really, but I'm trying to be. All right.
Well, we've got one last one. What's the ceiling for LA Galaxy? We got it on Twitter because we just talked about them a bit. Or should we wait for Doyle's tears piece next week? Is that another?
What tier would the Galaxy be in? Tease it, Doyle. Tease it. What, like, right? Like in the middle?
Not the bottom tier.
Yeah, like in the middle. Somewhere where the potential could push them.
Well, maybe the bottom tier, actually.
Really?
Now that I think about it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm not a huge believer in their defense. They have a question marks basically everywhere back there, including goalkeeper. John Dos Santos was awesome in 2019 and basically didn't play in 2020, so defensive midfield could be an issue. Their only depth there is a 18-year-old academy kid, or 20. I'm not sure how old Saldana is. So there are, I mean, I do suspect the attack will be a little more coherent because Greg Vanney's a very good coach in that regard. But Pavone was electric, and it's going to be tough to replace him. Chicharito's saying all the right things, but Chicharito was not good last year. It's a lot of stuff has to go right for LA to really climb, but they do have some talent. So
quote from Anders, I will bet any of you money they make the playoffs. He's throwing Chicharito 15 plus goals out there.
I will say this. We are in midseason form in our ability to take CCL and who's going to be good this year, bring a Galaxy team that didn't make the playoffs last year and still get them like a solid 10 minutes of showtime here at the end. So we're there.
Yeah.
We're back, baby.
And on that note, we're out of here. Big thanks to George Bello for joining us today. Monday is our predictions pod. So we're going to go through the entire season, all the individual awards, the Continental Tire Awards, et cetera, et cetera. If you have prompts or awards or predictions you would like us to make, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. On Thursday, we will take you through week one. All the biggest games, all the most important storylines, what to watch, how to watch, everything. So tune in for that as well. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.